It's the Book Club at 91.7 on WVXU and WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. You may recognize her name as the author of Eats, Shoots, and Leaves. Lynn Truss now has a new book out. This is fiction and what fiction it is, a fun romp called Cat Out of Hell. And Lynn Truss is here in the studio with me. Welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Oh, thank you so much, Mark.
As I was reading the book, the first question that popped into mind was whether you were a cat person or a dog person. And then I got to the afterword and discovered that, yes, you have had a relationship with cats.
I certainly did, yeah. I was very well known at one time for writing about my cats. I used to write in a newspaper, a column in the Times in London. And I wrote so often about my cat that there was a spoof thing in a satirical magazine about how the paper would have been 10 billion years ago or something. And it was said, you know, Matthew Paris writes about this, Libby Purvis writes about this, Lynn Truss on how my saber-toothed tiger is coping with the ice age. So I was very identified with them, yeah.
So were you asked to write this book? As I was reading the afterword, it seemed that you were commissioned or something.
I was commissioned, yeah.
So how did that come about?
Well, it was just out of the blue. I mean, I had written sort of slightly supernatural things about before, but this was published in the UK by Hammer, an imprint based on the old film studio brand. And of course, the old film studio used to make these very schlocky, lurid horror stories, you know, with Draculas and things, lots of blood and heaving bosoms and so on in the 50s, 60s, they're known for. And the brand name sort of revived, and they asked various literary type writers to try their hand at a novella, a gothic novella. And I was really thrilled to be asked to do one and didn't hesitate for a minute. I said, yes, I'd like to write a funny one about a talking cat. And then I had to think, you know, what's the plot and so on. So I knew immediately that that's what I would do. But then I had to obviously work out the finer details, which took quite a lot more effort.
Well, Cat Out of Hell is the story about a talking cat. How do you tell people what the book's about? Because I don't want to give too much away, Lynn. It's very
hard.
Easy to do.
So it's very hard to talk about without giving anything away. It's a real trick with this book. Well, what I often talk about is the structure of the book, because it seems to me you can say that, that it begins with a retired librarian who is sent a dossier, a sort of a folder of documents, and they concern the disappearance of a woman, her brother looking for her, and his discovery that her cat is a talking cat called Roger. And so there are documents written by this brother, whose name is Wiggy. There are documents by him. There are photographs, historical photographs, of Roger the cat and another cat called the Captain. And then there are also audio files, which the main character listens to and transcribes for us, which are conversations between Wiggy and Roger the cat. And there are also some screenplay attempts by Wiggy, which I find very funny to write, which are sort of terrible, but they also impart quite a lot of information. So as a reader, you know, you spend the first part of the book piecing the story together for yourself, which I think is quite a gratifying thing to do, and then it takes off as the main character Alec is drawn into the story himself. So that's as far as I can ever go.
Well, the thing is,
if you take anything out, either it doesn't work and it's not funny. It's all, you know, it's a web. It's a web.
It's quite a web it is. Cat Out of Hell by Lynn Truss. You can learn more about it at wvxu.org. And I was fascinated by the structure because you do use these emails. You know, there's a section called correspondence, and it's emails bouncing back and forth. And you found different ways to share the story. Was that in that structure aspect something you were experimenting with, playing with, or the way you wanted to tell the story?
I was experimenting. I think it's what I got from, you know, as I don't read horror. I don't read sort of scary horror books, but I've read lots of classic gothic novels. Mm-hmm. And classic gothic novels often have that kind of documentary device. You know, they are narratives within narratives. They'll say this the narrative is found under a stone, you know, under a, you know, a monastery, when a monastery was knocked down, and who knows who wrote it, you know, that sort of thing. So I've always loved that. I think it's sort of witty, but it also helps you believe believe this stuff. And so what I had to get out, I felt my job at the beginning of the book was definitely to convince people that the talking cat was just a character and that you didn't want to spend the whole time saying, I don't believe in this talking cat. So it had to be absorbed in very quickly as a fact that he was a talking cat who travelled the world, going on a grand tour to around Europe in the moonlight, you know, and all that. You know, you had to sort of buy that quite early on. So I found that very enjoyable to do. Also, I write a lot for radio at home. I write lots of radio drama, comedy and so on, where the whole effect is oral. You know, all of it's about listening. It's all about the sound of the words and so on. And this, to me, was a book. It was a chance to write something. It was a sort of document. And it was all about the documentary evidence and turning the pages and reading, you know. So that was also part of that, because if you change the sort of thing you're reading, you know, these are emails, a series of emails, you have to look at them really carefully, look at the times, go back, look back, mm-hmm. see what time that one was sent, see what time the next one was sent. Why is this person getting so worked up? Oh, because he's waited a day since the last email. You know, so that sort of thing is playing with the reader rather than with the listener. So that's why I love doing that.
Well, and you say, you know, very Gothic influence on it, but it was interesting to have that technology up against that Gothic structure.
Yeah, no, it's a nice, it is, isn't it? But I was thinking about this earlier. I mean, actually, when you look at, I reread Dracula fairly recently. One of the important sort of factors in Dracula, which is so interesting, is the invention of the typewriter. It is actually, there's one of the characters, there's a clerk who goes to Transylvania, meets Dracula. There's a lot about him. His account of what happened. Well, his girlfriend, who is under threat of Dracula herself, learns to type. And she has a typewriter and she starts collecting all the different narratives together. So what we're reading is her collation of all this documentary evidence. So, and the typewriter would have been a very new invention at that time. So I sort of feel it might be in that tradition.
The voice of Alec, I love the voice of Alec, because you bring in his personality so much and so well in the book, through his little asides, and especially when he begins to talk with Wiggy, mm-hmm. and who he has only read about and never talked to before, and he has, you know, it's funny to see his assumptions. Is this any of you coming through then, or is somebody you know with his twist on things?
I think he has a familiar style, I have to say. I think he's a bit like me. He's my age, you know. He's my age. I think a lot of his references are my references. But I've, you know, he is a man, and he's been married for a long time, and his wife has died. So I feel very, you know, I think people always fall in love with their characters. I suppose mainly I fell in love with Roger in this.
Well, everybody does.
The cat, Roger, because he's so beautiful and has wonderful piercing green eyes and has such an interesting history. But Alec is very close to home. And so I do. I watch, let's just say, the University Challenge, which is something he watches. It's something I watch, and we have very similar ways of
responses.
Watching it.
Do you feel the same way about Volvos? Let me see. How was it described as a Swedish saloon car of legendarily robust construction? That's yours, too?
No, actually, I don't have a Volvo.
Well, it was, but bringing these aspects of life in and attitude, because Alec's mm-hmm. mind taking this all in. It must have been quite an exercise to stay with that voice.
Well, I think you're right, and there is. It is because the basic thing is so preposterous and silly and incredibly far-fetched. And so it's really important that he seems like a real person having real thoughts. And And when it gets to the sort of dramatic climax, which we won't give away, of course, he's not eaten for about 2 days. He's driven on. I've done this many times. You know, when I think, oh, the weather's getting worse, shall I stop and eat something or shall I keep going? And he's decided to keep going, keep going. So the effect is when he finally arrives is that he's exhausted and he's terribly hungry and he's sort of distracted by that. And he's, you know, so all this momentous stuff is happening in front of him and he's just faint with hunger and a bit delirious.
All for the want of a sausage sandwich.
Yes.
Right, but, and especially, you know, really showing his humanness when he is so disturbed that he could have had a meal, but he skipped it instead. So I'm speaking with Lynn Truss. She's the author of Cat Out of Hell. You can learn more at wvxu.org. And while it does have some horror and does have some blood in it, it's the humor throughout that I really attracted me, Lynn. I mean, you have such a nice take on the world. As you're writing, is that something that you have to find, that lighter side of life? I mean, how do you find that lighter side of life?
Oh, I don't know. I write, you know, to entertain myself a lot of the time. And so, you know, keep my own spirits up, really. I think it's, I've written, you know, comedy and I write, you know, comic columns and things like that all the time. So it is sort of second nature, really, to look for the lighter side. I don't know what it, you know, gives to humankind. You know, I don't know what I'll leave behind. But I sort of feel, well, I love it. You know, at the end of the book, he actually says, I did this for my wife. And that breaks me up every time. I sobbed when I wrote it. I sobbed at the ending. I don't know if anyone else finds the ending affecting at all. But to me, it was that he's sort of wanted to give her something that she would have found funny. And so I sort of justify it in a way at the end, narratively.
Well, in the afterword, you share a wonderful story about a handmade book in a box. And how you lost it for some time, but after you finished this novel, you ran across it again when you were moving house. Can you share a little bit of that story?
Well, it was in the background. I think it was to do with, you know, as I say, the folder that Alec finds has some pictures in it, has some photographs of these long ago garden with some cats in it. And behind that, for me, was this little book that someone had given to me. It was a handmade little book done in 1934. And it has tipped in individual these little photographs of this particular cat that was his cat. The Adaptable Cat, it's called. And it's a really charming little book. And you turn the pages and it's a little poem that goes alongside the pictures. We thought about putting the pictures in, but they are so murky. Mm-hmm. And on just ordinary print, they wouldn't come out at all. So it did seem wrong. Anyway, so they were in the background to the book. And then any film I'm watching, the fact that the actors are all dead really doesn't upset me. The fact that the cats and dogs are dead always makes it, I always think, that dog isn't alive anymore. You know, so I always sort of think that. So anyway, so these dead cats in this book had always meant something to me. But anyway, yes, exactly. I found it again. I thought, oh, good. I just moved house and it reappeared. And of course, turning the pages, there's a friend. The cat has a friend, and it's an enormous black cat that looks like a bear. I mean, it's enormous. It's so big. And I had, for you know, that wasn't in my conscious mind at all when I created the big black cat in Cat Out of Hell. Well, and then there's a picture with them both with a rabbit. But I just thought, oh, that's a spoiler. I don't want to know about the rabbit. But it was there. It was there.
Well, you talk about a lot of habits that cats have, and I love how you bring cat lore, if you may, into things. Did you write this for cat lovers or cat haters? Because it could go both ways. You know, like I really see how cat lovers would like it, and I really see how cat haters might have a lot explained to
them. I
do.
I cover myself, don't I, really?
Yes. But do you?
I think, well, I don't think anyone would... I don't think a cat hater would read a book about cats, would they? I mean, I think...
You're safe with that.
So I think it's pretty much for cat lovers. But you know, some of the reviews have said, you will never look at your cat in the same way again, you know, and that's exactly what I wanted. I mean, I've read loads about cats and you know, about cat behaviour and the history of it, the reason behind it. And so it did seem like a wonderful opportunity to be quite mischievous about what this behavior might be. Why do they purr? Do you think it's something nice? You know, you think when they do that puddling thing in your lap that it's just they want their mother's milk. Well, it might not be. So I just wanted to sort of introduce some doubt about where that some of this stuff comes from.
Well, I have to say I saw a lot of my own relationship with my own cats in the cats here in Cat Out of Hell. So, I don't think I will look at my cats the same way again. Well, here on the book club, Lynn, we like to ask, what are you reading? What are you reading, Lynn Truss?
What am I reading? Well, I've just arrived by plane from the UK, and I always read P.G. Wodehouse when I travel because there's so much of him, and I've read a fraction, really, still. So I'm reading Piccadilly Jim by P.G. Wodehouse at the moment, and it's very funny. I mean, he's, you know, talk about light. Mm-hmm. I absolutely adore his style. So, and the, you know, it's got the usual sort of farcical plot with people pretending to be other people and for the sake of love and so on. And it's glorious.
Well, thank you very much for being here today.
Oh, thank you very much. It's lovely for me.
Lynn Truss, her new book is Cat Out of Hell. You can learn more about it and more about her other books at our website, wvxu.org. This is The Book Club at 91.7. You've been listening to The Book Club at 91.7. Technical director is Bruce Ellis. Producer is Kevin Reynolds. Rick Andrus is music director and segment engineer. Jim Nolan is our web guru. And Robin Carey Allgaier is the announcer. And I'm Mark Purcell. I hope you'll be back for next Saturday's Book Club at 91.7. You'll hear award-winning Cincinnati author Sharon Draper discussing her new middle-grade book, Stella by Starlight, set in the tiny town of Bumblebee, North Carolina in the 1930s, and inspired by the diary of her grandmother. Sharon Draper in the studio next Saturday on the Book Club at 91.7. Stay tuned for Weekend Edition next on 91.7 WVXU.